This is Party Line on WILO 1570 AM and 96.9 FM. At your side since 1960. This is your forum for public opinion and comment. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent the views of WILO management, employees, or sponsors. If you're listening live at 8:30, you're invited to give us a call locally at 765-659-3338 or toll-free at 1-800-447-4463. If you're listening to this program on our afternoon encore broadcast, don't call, just enjoy the show. Now let's join Party Line on 1570 AM and 96.9 FM WILO.
And good morning and welcome to Party Line on this TGIF. I'm Kevin Keith. We've got Jennifer Ping, Shelter Insurance, one of our fine sponsors. We're your shield, we're your shelter. Kramer Lumber, New Witt Center, Welty Custom Exteriors, Welty works for you. Encompass Credit Union, community-minded just like you. Susan Casper, State Farm Insurance, like a good neighbor, Susan is there. Sparrow's Florist and Greenhouse, call today for delivery today. Milner Healthcare, Hardesty Landscaping, Hearing Care Professionals, Hear Well, Live Well. Johnny V's Main Street Grill, Ivy Tech Community College, Changing Lives, Pepe's Mexican Restaurant, and ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, your free local online newspaper. Well, here we are on a Friday, and joining me right off the bat in the studio is Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Sommer. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. Good to see you as always. We've got a lot we wanted to pack into the first half hour here on Party Line. First off, I received an email overnight, and when I got in this morning, I saw that you are going to, you've officially made an announcement for an endorsement of one of our four Clinton County sheriff candidates. So I'll let you make that announcement right now for Rich Kelly.
Well, I appreciate that. Yes. I am endorsing Rich Kelly as a candidate for sheriff here in Clinton County. I think he represents a positive opportunity for change in the Clinton County Sheriff's Office. You know, clearly we have Jeff Ward, who has served as sheriff for two terms, and he can't serve again. There has to be a change. Mm-hmm. And Rich Kelly represents an opportunity for a positive change. I've known Rich for 25 years, met him when he was assigned to the Lafayette post of the Indiana State Police as a trooper in 1993. He is a dedicated professional law enforcement officer, courteous with others, listens, he's open, and I think that that represents a good characteristic for someone to serve as sheriff here in Clinton County.
Could be interesting with a state policeman moving over to a county sheriff position as well.
You know, certainly, and we've seen that actually in many counties around the state over the years. It's not an uncommon transition to make. In fact, it's the very transition that former Sheriff Mark Mitchell made when he served his two terms prior to Jeff Ward taking office.
I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't around at that time.
Mm-hmm. So I've known Mark Mitchell for 30 years.
Okay, so, very good. Well, let's talk briefly about the opioid issue in our community and all across, you know, parts of the state and the nation. What's, you know, we're having community conversations with the Center Township Trustee Kevin Evans, and I think we're all in agreement that we need to throw everything we can at this issue, not on an epidemic level, but it's a problem, and it's a problem in a lot of places. I think we're doing the right thing by making those community conversations and trying to include everybody, because they have, and they've done a fantastic job. But there's, from the Clinton County prosecutor's standpoint, there's a couple things that you think we would need, because, you know, talking about it is good, and we have to have those discussions, but we need something to come out of it. And we're only about halfway through these community conversations, and you were telling me just a little bit off the air, you've identified a few things you think could help us out locally here.
Certainly. I think that opioid abuse is very serious, that it can lead someone to only one of two places, death or prison. So it is a problem that has to be addressed, and it affects beyond the individual who is the abuser. It affects their families. It does affect the community. Crimes are committed to support the abuse of an addict. So under the circumstances, that problem has to be addressed with resources. I attended the first community panel discussion that was sponsored by United Way and Mr. Evans, and was asked a question from the audience if I thought it was an epidemic. And I think that people in attendance were disappointed when I said no. But at the time, I was explaining that as a part of my caseload that I see as a prosecutor, that serious drug abuse cases are 15% of the total number of drug cases that I see, and drug cases are only 15% of my total caseload. So under the circumstances, it is a slice of a slice of the caseload that I see. But it is something that is pernicious. It is something that takes a lot of resources to address. Overcoming addictions requires a lot of services for an individual. Trying to force a person to participate in those services is very difficult until we get them to the point where they actually engage and want the services. As far as the services here in the community, the two things that I see that we really need in this community, a sober living facility for men to be able to transition back into the community when they still need a lot of support around them and need to be separated from the people, places, and things that were associated with their prior habits of use. And the other facility that would be very nice to have but takes resources that are well beyond my ability to marshal would be an inpatient treatment facility. We don't have that here in the county at this time. People that need inpatient treatment by medical professionals have to go outside of the community to get that service.
Well, I think I've told you and I've shared with the listeners, I've been all over the state of Indiana. Well, not all over, but over a big portion of it, working in radio throughout my career. And one little city that I worked in was Scottsburg, Indiana, mm-hmm. southern Indiana, just off the interstate there.
Yep.
And I was there, gosh, probably 15 years ago. But I saw last year, and then I just saw it again this morning, they are going to go back to the, help me out here, the Safe Needle Exchange program here.
They've been doing that down there for a while, but in that county,
that is such a small, rural, poor county.
It is a small, rural,
poor county,
and they had a majority of. I mean, they did have a widespread problem there, mm-hmm. and their widespread problem came from, of all things, the abuse of propanol to begin with. Propanol is the same substance that led to the death of. Some of our famous rock stars.
Okay. I'm trying to think.
So it is an opiate based substance.
I've never heard of that.
It's a heavy painkiller. So it was very unusual that would come from an abuse of that particular substance in a small community like that. But it led to a lot of needle sharing, and that then led to also a health crisis because it spread some blood-borne diseases within a large segment of the population there. So that is the kind of concern that leads to the need for a needle exchange program.
Mm-hmm.
I've not been given any statistics regarding a problem like that in our community that would justify having a needle exchange program in our community. Some communities have open methadone clinics.
Mm-hmm.
Indianapolis is one that I'm specifically familiar with having methadone clinics. And I don't see a widespread need in our community for something that is that over the top with regard to addressing the problems. So I think that what we have to do is recognize that we've been fairly fortunate thus far in our community that as the rest of the state and the rest of the nation deals with the abuse of opiate-based substances, that our community thus far has actually fared relatively better than even surrounding communities, according to law enforcement sources. That doesn't mean we don't address what we have.
Sure.
It doesn't mean we don't need resources to address what we have.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a problem, but I think you have to be clear-eyed about the scope of the issue for our community. And so our solutions don't need to be some kind of cookie-cutter similarity, same as you're seeing in other communities. We need to tailor something that's appropriate for us. And in that regard, that's where I come back to what I said before as to what I think are needs in our community. Sober living facility for men, which would be beyond just heroin. I mean, I see meth abuse as another serious abuse problem. And just in general, probably the most common substance abused in the community is alcohol. And
mm-hmm.
so we have people who have alcohol abuse problems that need a sober living facility for transition purposes. So it's multi-use in terms of a sober living facility and its potential to help out people who are trying to transition.
The transition from
involvement in criminal justice, being in the criminal justice system, and transitioning back to the community. But then beyond that, if our citizens and people that are coping with problems here in our community didn't always have to travel outside of our community for inpatient treatment. It would be nice if we had some of those services right here.
Mm-hmm. They used to be called a halfway house almost, right?
Right.
And, you know, people,
that's,
like you said, transition is the
sometimes
key.
That's what they call it. You know, they still call it that. Whatever you want to call it. It is a facility where there are controls and there is an ability to separate themselves from their substance of temptation and the people and places where they used to be when they abused.
So switching gears a little bit, last month, Ken Hartman went to a sentencing here in Clinton County and texted me immediately after he got out of the courtroom for Michaela Wood that she had received 3 years. And, you know, initially, I think, Tony, I thought the same thing everyone else thought on Facebook. Wow, 3 years, that's all that the sentencing was. And then I heard the soundbite that Ken had put it in perspective the next day that he had talked to you about, that you were working within the guidelines that you have at this moment.
That's correct.
You wanted to kind of clarify that again.
I do, because every time one of those cases is resolved, there is a large outcry regarding the result. And the feeling that you had is the feeling that many people have. It's the feeling that I have, that it's not enough. It's insufficient. That a sentence of 3 years for killing someone. So Michaela Wood was sentenced for operating a vehicle while intoxicated, causing the death of Kathy Camp. And I never want to forget the victim in these cases, too. That's
right.
An important part of the story. So under the circumstances, 3 years for killing someone seems entirely insufficient. But what people have to understand is that the sentencing guideline in the state of Indiana for operating a vehicle while intoxicated, killing someone, establishes 3 years as the advisory sentence. And in the absence of aggravating factors, a judge can't get over the 3 years, the advisory sentence. So the only way that you get over the 3 years, the things that would be aggravating factors, is if more than one person were killed or injured in the accident, or the person has prior criminal history that aggravates the sentencing circumstances. The judge has to balance aggravating and mitigating circumstances. The absence of prior criminal history is actually a mitigating circumstance, which can cause a judge to have to look at something less than 3 years. Here the judge went to the 3 years. Even though there was a lack of prior criminal history because of the facts of the case. So the highest that the judge can get under those circumstances is exactly the sentence the judge gave in this case. Another thing that happens in the reporting on these cases, and it's accurate, that there's a number of charges that were dismissed. In this particular case, there were 9 or 10 counts that were dismissed when the offender pled guilty. And people think that somehow that let the offender off with less than they would have otherwise received. That's what wasn't true, and it's another part of my comment immediately following the sentencing hearing. The result that was achieved by Michaela Wood pleading guilty in that case is exactly the same result that would have been achieved if she would have pled guilty on every count. It is exactly the same result that could be received if she had been taken to trial and had been found guilty of every count at trial. All of that comes under the heading of an episode of criminal conduct. And in the absence of more than one person killed or injured, there's no ability to stack those sentences. The sentences have to be run at the same time. So under the circumstances, that's what people don't understand. And they think that the sentence should have been more, and I agree with that. But in fact, under the current Indiana law, there's no ability to get to a higher sentence on those facts with the law that we have. So if you're unhappy with the sentence parameters on the offense, where you turn to is the legislature. Because the legislature sets the sentencing parameters that the judge is bound by, that I am bound by, in terms of how I negotiate these cases and how they're resolved.
Well, you know, a lot of times we have something high profile like that and very sad and terrible in the community. We don't always think of those things, you know.
And it's you're looking at just the outcome and you're looking at the sentence and saying that's not right. And that kind of common sense reaction is what I expect from the people of this community. It's what I expect from jurors when they serve in trials. I expect them to apply their common sense. But the fact of the matter is the law limits what can happen. So take your common sense and talk to your legislature.
Right. And that's why sometimes you see a family who may have had something like that, they will lobby a legislature, right?
They will. And sometimes a story of how this turned out for a particular person or family is so important in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
When they have a story to put with the law, the dry black and white letter of the law that they deal with, it can really have an impact. It can cause results. It can make for change. So it is important for people to approach the legislature with ideas, and this is an opportunity.
So, Tony, you were telling me off the air that you've got a heavy filing rate right now.
Sure do.
Things already at least 20% above this time last year?
More than 20%.
Wow.
We're running very heavy filing levels so far this year, higher than we were running last year and well above normal. We tend to file around 100 cases per month in this county, and we've been filing 120 or more on average. I think so far this month, we'd already filed 160 cases.
Wow.
And so things are running well above normal right now. In part, what's going on is we have some new officers who have come back from training, and they're out there on solo patrol now, and they weren't there before. More law enforcement results in more enforcement action being taken.
Tony, we've got a caller. Carl Lane, good morning to you, sir.
Yes, good morning, Kevin, Mr. Summers.
Good morning.
Does the money to fight drugs in the state of Indiana, is that federal, state, or county?
It's all the above. There are federal grants that are used for criminal justice purposes. Those are administered by the Criminal Justice Institute, and they are distributed to courts and law enforcement agencies, probation and community corrections agencies all across the state of Indiana. So the Criminal Justice Institute is a state entity. Part of the agencies that receive some of those grant monies are state agencies. Part of those agencies are county and city agencies. There is also then your tax dollars at work at the local level, used to run police departments, used to run jails and sheriff's offices. And so those are local monies and state monies. So you have a mix of funding from all sources. One of the largest portions of the budget of Clinton County and a large line item in the city budget have to do with running the sheriff's office and the Frankfort City Police Department.
Okay, now if you said you needed a couple of facilities here in Frankfort for people that was on drugs and stuff like that, would mm-hmm. that be supported by the county, the state, or the federal?
There are opportunities in a facility like that to apply for grant money so that part of the money would come from the state level grants administered that could involve federal dollars. They have to partner with city or county agencies in order to be eligible for that kind of grant funding for a facility. But quite often the way those facilities are started is by the formation of a private, not-for-profit corporation whose sole purpose is running a facility. So quite often it's a private effort to initiate such a facility.
And that money would not have to be paid back if you got grant money. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's not paid back. But understand, everything you talk about when it's local, state, or federal government involved are really your tax dollars. And so That's right.
Do you have any kind of rough figures? I know you wouldn't have the exact figure, but would you, in your estimation, what would you say the state of Indiana would shell out in tax money for drugs? Just a rough estimate.
Oh, you know, that is hard to give a rough estimate on. I know that the budgets of state agencies run into the millions, and so under the circumstances, there is a portion of that has to do with drug enforcement efforts. But when you say what drugs cost the state of Indiana, you're talking about so much more that I don't have direct experience with. Under the circumstances, you know, the office of the prosecutor here in Clinton County is running on a budget of around $250,000 a year.
Wow.
A lot of that is personnel expenditures. But my office, you know, only 15% of the cases I'm handling are drug cases. And of those cases, only 15% are the serious meth and heroin cases.
Uh-huh.
So when you talk about how that money's being used, it's only really a portion of the dollars that could be say we could say is being attributed towards drug abuse issues. But when you talk about the cost of drug abuse to the state of Indiana, it's so much broader than that. There are other crimes that are committed to support people who have addiction problems, so it's really a larger part of my caseload than just the cases that bear the title heroin possession or meth possession or dealing heroin, dealing methamphetamine. It's so much broader than that. Some of the cases that are burglary cases are really because someone has a heroin or a methamphetamine habit. Some of the cases I deal with that are probation violations on an entirely unrelated charge. They may have been arrested for operating while intoxicated or possession of marijuana. And then while they're on probation, there's a positive drug screen for a serious substance like methamphetamine or heroin. And so we have to deal with that as a probation violation in the first instance. But then beyond that, you have people who, because of their substance abuse issues, wind up having to draw upon other services in the state of Indiana to support themselves. They're not employed. They have health issues that come from their drug abuse, and it winds up being a burden on taxpayers in the state of Indiana when those kinds of things happen. So it's so hard for me to put a dollar figure on that. It's a very hefty dollar figure.
Yeah, you know, you told me one time on the radio, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm almost positive you said it's the same people over and over and over. Is it still that way, or getting new people?
Oh, well, certainly every now and then, you know, we do have new names that enter the picture. Sometimes we'll have new offenders that move into the area. Sometimes a young person growing up in the community will turn out to be a serial offender. But, yeah, as I've explained in the past, you're exactly right. I spend 95% of my time on about 5% of the population, and that 5% of the population are people that I see over and over and over again.
Well, can't we have the sheriff's department, the police department, give them an offer they can't refuse? Well, I mean, say, like, we're going to give you 24 hours to get out of the county, or
actually,
no.
Actually, no. You know, you go back a few decades, and county judges used to tell someone that as a part of their sentence they had to leave a county. But people actually have a constitutional right to freely travel about. And so under the circumstances, it's unconstitutional for state figures and actors to tell someone that they have to leave a county or a state. So that is not an option that we have. I think that when we talk about how matters are handled by my office, the enforcement efforts that we see out of the sheriff's office, the Frankfort Police Department, our town marshals, that I think we're sending the right message, that if you want to live that lifestyle, that you are going to come under scrutiny in this county and it will be addressed. And that's the message we want to send. We want to have that deterrent effect. We want people to understand this is not a safe community to come and commit crimes.
Yes, that's correct. Mr. Summers, I'm going to get off here, and I want you to have a wonderful weekend, and you too, Kevin.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks for the call. All right. And we've got just a couple minutes left in our portion here with Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Sommer. I wanted to run a couple other things past you. I saw this morning, and Ken Hartman prints out our show prep, we call it here on the radio, and I saw this morning. I had to double check, and I even went online to make sure I was seeing this right, that Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer wants to decriminalize marijuana across the U.S. Schumer told Vice News, which is on HBO, I watch that sometime, that's pretty decent, that he'll introduce a bill on the matter sometime next week, and said the legislation is long overdue. Schumer says if smoking weed doesn't hurt others, it should be legal. I know your opinion on that, but I just wanted to get your thought on Chuck Schumer.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that. It's actually not different than efforts that we've seen in the past, not only at the national level, but state legislature has taken up bills to decriminalize marijuana in the state of Indiana. There are many people who think that marijuana should be legalized. I'm not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen people under the influence of marijuana who commit offenses such as operating a vehicle in a state of intoxication and cause harm to other people. So to say it doesn't harm others, I think, is inaccurate. Now, there are those then who say, well, it's no worse than alcohol, which is a legal substance to consume if you're of age. And my response to that has always been, do you realize how many problems come to my office that are fueled by alcohol?
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's a very poor comparison to say it's no worse than alcohol. And then the other thing I'm always fond of pointing out to people who want to decriminalize marijuana but want to criminalize tobacco use. Do you think smoking marijuana is better for your health than smoking a cigarette?
Right. You're still putting things in your lungs.
Yeah,
right?
It's still the product of combustion, and I just can't believe it's good for you.
Right.
Or that the secondhand smoke from the activity is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So under the circumstances, I disagree.
I'm a little more convinced.
The Senate majority leader's position, the Senate minority leader's, I should say, minority right. leader's position.
Right.
At this point, anyway, he's a minority leader.
I'm a little more open than I used to be on some medicinal, things that I've seen. That,
they keep working with the substance that is contained in marijuana, THC. That's the active ingredient. It's already available in some medications, even mm-hmm. here in the state of Indiana, for nausea suppression, which is one of the first medicinal uses that were recommended for people that are going through chemo and radiation therapy who have a lot of nausea. We see marijuana being used in combination with consumption of alcohol because marijuana suppresses the nausea so you can drink more
mm-hmm. right.
and not vomit.
Right.
Okay. So that way you can get your alcohol levels even higher.
Right.
What a great idea.
Yeah, great.
What a great idea in your personal conduct.
Right.
Okay. Achieving that new alcohol level in your
high,
system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Which, by the way, when you get it high enough, your body shuts down and you die. So
I
don't know that that's really something you should be pursuing in your personal experience.
Yes, we don't condone that, do we?
So anyway, I think that the medical field continues to explore ways to use THC in pharmaceuticals, and I've heard recently of a new substance that's just being approved by the FDA at the federal level for seizure suppression
mm-hmm.
That has THC involved. So we have a pharmaceutical industry that can come up with ways to use substances that are beneficial to human beings.
Right.
I don't think that we have to rely on smoking a joint.
Right, right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, if there's a good way to get it done, I'm sure they can do it.
They'll probably figure it out, won't they?
I don't think that we have to go to a street corner dealer and get a joint to address our medical needs.
One more question. I believe it was Wednesday, or maybe late Tuesday night. I don't know. It's been a crazy week for me. But Michael Cohen, the attorney for mm-hmm. the personal attorney of Donald Trump, President
right.
Trump, he had his house and his offices mm-hmm. raided by the FBI about a week ago or so.
Sure.
I was kind of outraged. I mean, I am a Trump supporter in a lot of cases. I think he needs to shut up sometimes, like we all agree. But where was the attorney-client privilege there? Because it seems like the FBI...
That's an issue. It's
yeah.
an issue that...
They keep leaking everything and putting it out there. And then the judge said it wasn't,
If an attorney is involved in criminal activity personally or assisting a criminal, then that attorney is going to expose their business records related to that effort to search and seizure.
Mm-hmm.
So the standards are still present related to search and seizure that exist under federal and state constitutional standards, which almost uniformly require a warrant or, in the absence of a warrant, some exceptions, but always that the action of the government be reasonable when they engage in search and seizure activity. Those are the limitations upon government actors when they engage in mm-hmm. that particular activity that come from our constitutions. Under the circumstances, those still apply. Work product privilege is a special area. If the kinds of documents or materials that are being sought in search and seizure are work product privileged information, then there actually has to be an argument submitted to a court who's issuing such a warrant for a search, which a raid always involves pretty much. When you say a raid, what you're really mm-hmm. talking about is they served a search warrant.
Right.
They had a
right.
warrant from a court that said you can go in and see certain information. You're allowed, to do this. And so we're dealing with they had to have given an argument to a court that overcame the protections of work product privilege in
okay.
order to get that warrant.
I've been waiting a couple of days to ask you that question.
Yeah, so. I understand. So now, did the court get it right? I mean, that's always subject to someone later examining and seeing, did the court get it right?
Right.
Did the government, whoever the government actor was, which here we involved Department of Justice, FBI, were involved, did they give an honest explanation to that court, and did the court get it right?
Mm-hmm.
That's all subject to examination later.
Sure. Thank you so much for your time, Tony. Always good to see you, Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Summer. Have a good weekend, and thanks for being a friend to WILO.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we're coming back with more Party Line next here on WILO.